Feeling pretty good about today until Joshua informed us that public speaking is the second most fearful thing in the world. And it comes just behind the fear of dying. But I have it on a good source that I can be victorious over death. So I'm going to forge ahead with public speaking and see how it works out. I want to make some observations this evening about the eldership as a position, and about these elders in this church, and some specific things that we are doing here. I think this will be of interest to you and of use to you. And for some of you who haven't been with us too very long, I think it'll be informative about the elders and some of the things we're involved in here. So I want to talk about working together. You might subtitle this The Care and Feeding of Elders, but it's not a presentation on the qualifications of elders and so forth. It's about the work of the elder, and particularly this situation we have here. There are five men now serving as elders here. Brother Malcolm Hilliard has been serving for over 25 years. Malcolm and Thelma have four boys. They all live in the area, Limestone, Madison County. Brother Bob Harbor is serving as an elder here, and Bob and Connie have several children spread around. Of course, Noble is here and his family. Bob has formerly served at the church in Missouri, in St. Louis, Missouri, before coming here. I've been serving for 10 or 12 years now. Jane and I have three children. Two of them are here. One's in Limestone County with their families. Brother Maurice Romine has been serving for 5 or 6 or 7 years now. And Maurice and Linda have two sons. One is here and one is in Massachusetts with his family. And Gary Crafts has been serving now for about 10 months or so, something like that. And, of course, Gary and Debbie have two children. One's in Florida, and Brittany's here at home. I should also mention, I suppose, so you'll, those of you who are new to the church here, Gary is in his early 50s. I'm 61. Maurice is about 63, I believe. And then two of the guys are old fellows, but that's the five we have here now. This church is unusual in that we have within our family here a number of men who have served as elders before. And those are Stan Dvorak in Illinois, Tom Tao in Illinois, Bill Holliday in Florida, Jimmy Nance, of course, here, and John Nunn down in Texas. And we, as I say, we're fortunate to have these men here. We consult with them from time to time on particular issues and even occasionally as a group to talk to them about the work of the church here. It's good to have these men available to us here. And frankly, I think the consensus of opinion, certainly among the elders, and I think among with the church here, is that we need more elders. There are several other men here who could be serving or could be serving soon, and we look forward to having more men qualified and serving in this role whenever we can. I do want to mention the terminology about elders. In Acts 20, verse 17, for example, Paul sent for the elders of the church. This comes from the word presbyteros. He later called those very men bishops or overseers. And this comes from the word episcopus. And in Ephesians 4, 1 Timothy 5, the terms pastor and shepherd are introduced, or leading, feeding, tending. All these refer to the same position, but I mention those because they highlight what the role of an elder is. It is regrettable that in our in the denominational world that exists today, at least two of these terms have been taken and appropriated or misappropriated, I would think, and that's caused a great deal of confusion on people's understanding of what the Bible teaches about this. Most churches who have some ecclesiastical hierarchy somewhere along the way will have bishops, and those bishops are not exactly what we would call elders in the church today. We would view a bishop to be. Other denominations, and among the Baptists in particular, will have pastors, and typically what they call a pastor, we would call a preacher. And so it confuses people about what these words really mean because of these misappropriations of the use of the words. And we typically refer to these men as elders. I really think overseers or pastors is a better terminology, but there is some confusion in the world about that, and we understand that calling people elders is perfectly fine. But I mentioned these to discuss the role of elders. What elders, who they are and what they do is implied by these terms. Elder, overseer, bishop, pastor, shepherd. And it's probably best summarized if I had to choose one verse out of the text from Hebrews 13:17. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit to them, for they watch in behalf of your souls as they that shall give account, that they may do this with joy and not with grief, for this were unprofitable to you. These are men who rule over the church, have the oversight of a church, and they watch in behalf of your souls. If you want to follow that, some of you can read some significant sections of Ezekiel deal with the role of the watchman in Israel. And that's often used to illustrate or illuminate what's meant by being a watchman. I have taken some text from a writer and adapted it to my own purposes here, but to describe the role of elders, and particularly in the context we're discussing this evening. Elders are to look into the condition of the flock over which they've been appointed, with a view to ascertain whether they may need, in some spiritual sense, ascertain what they may need in some spiritual sense, and then seek to provide this in their examples, instructions, explanations, and exhortations. In matters of judgment, the elder should oversee the making of decisions so that the will of God is observed. Illustration of this role is presented in Acts 11, where the church at Antioch send assistance to the church in Judea. Since the elders have the role of overseeing a congregation, it's obvious that it's their responsibility to see that the brethren follow the will of God in handling the relief in this particular case. And of course, that's Acts 11. And I would suggest to you, if you want to explore all this in more detail, I guess the single most cogent description of the work and role of elders would be found in Brother Clinton Hamilton's commentary on 1 Peter. Beyond the commentary part of his book, he has some appendices in there. And Appendix 6 is dedicated to the role and work of elders. And you'll find that, I think, very illuminating in that study. I want to make some observations about deliberations. Much of the work of elders is focused on deliberations and discussions. That is to say, meetings. If you did a word association and came to me and said meeting, I would say long or arduous, because that's kind of the first thing that pops into your mind. I guess in the past, my view of meetings, of church meetings, whether it's the deacons or the elders or the men or anybody almost, has been that they were overdone, too long, and kind of overkills in terms of addressing issues and so forth. I don't really feel that way about the meetings that the elders here have, or the elders and deacons, because I think we're fruitful in what we do, and we spend a lot of time talking about things because we have a lot of things to talk about, a lot of things to discuss. I'm not sure I'd have that same feeling with other groups, I probably still feel they were too long and somewhat arduous, but I think our meeting time is well spent. But I do think of long when I think of meetings. Just to give you an overview of what we do, we have a quarterly meeting here with the men of the congregation. In that meeting, we review, it's a general review of church affairs, what's going on, what's coming up, and so forth. We try to always provide some time for question and answers, any questions people may want to pose, and answers to those. Those meetings are recorded, at least the highlights, the synopsis is recorded, and those minutes of those meetings are available. They're distributed and available to anyone to take a look at, so you'll be familiar with the material presented in those meetings. That's quarterly. We have a monthly meeting, the elders do, with the deacons. And in that meeting, it's a more detailed review of the work assignments, where they stand, where they need coordination with the elders or with each other, whatever is appropriate to be discussed in that context. We now have 14 deacons. Fortunately, some of them, when they come to these meetings, have no report. Saves us some time. But if you go into detail on all of those, it takes a while to do that. We usually set aside an hour and have to hurry to get through in the hour, typically. That's monthly. We have a monthly meeting with Alan Dvorak, our preacher here. In that meeting, we again review recent events, upcoming events. We coordinate sermons and the teaching. Alan is very diligent in preparing, usually in a three-month cycle, a list of sermons he's going to present to the assembly here, and provides that to us. We make some requests occasionally about particular topics we want covered, but we review that. We coordinate our own schedules. He has some business to tend to other than here in Madison County, so we coordinate those. And also, we meet not regularly, but on occasion with Joshua or whoever's here working with us in a training program. We have meetings with others upon request or as needed to discuss things with them. In particular, we meet with the new members of this congregation, and I'll discuss that in more detail in a few minutes. We meet with members concerning spiritual or personal problems they may be experiencing and seek our assistance. We meet with visiting evangelists who come through town. July almost covered us up this year, but it's good to see these men. And besides those that we're already supporting who come to visit, we have a number of men or occasionally men come by who are seeking support, and we meet with them, discuss their work and what their needs are. We've also at least once had what typically in the business world is called an off-site meeting. We go somewhere else to meet for a while. Last year, the four elders that were then serving met for 2 days and to discuss a number of matters. We just had an accumulation of things and needed some detailed discussions. We spent 2 days talking about a long list of topics, and I anticipate we'll be doing that again sometime before too long. Then we have the regular elders meeting. We meet monthly on a scheduled basis. It's the first Sunday evening after our services, and that depends on the needs and schedules and the calendar constraints. We are learning to try to avoid the 4th of July and other dates, and we're getting better at that, but it's typically the first Sunday night. It's scheduled to be one time per month. Typically, it's two or three times or four or five times. We meet as needed, but one time a month for sure, and we typically hold our longer meeting at that time. These meetings last from 1 to 3 or 4 hours. On Sunday evenings when we have the elders meeting, we, of course, begin our meeting about 6:30. And sometimes we don't leave until 10, 10:30, 11. We feel it's been a great success if we get out by 9 or so. It takes a lot of time to have these meetings, and I'll explain that more in a moment. But 1 to 4 hours is not is typical. We also, as some of you are aware, I think, rotate the chairmanship of the meeting monthly. This is just to share the load. And so for that particular meeting, whoever's time it is to be the chairman, it goes alphabetical. It's not a secret about this. The chairman will prepare the agenda, collect information or whatever, make any pre-meeting contacts they might need to make or any information needs to collect to be ready to discuss in that meeting. And he will also, for that month, coordinate other meetings that we have. If someone contacts us to have a meeting or whatever, usually he's the person who finally decides or calls around and gets that meeting set up. And it's like we rotate that just to kind of share the burden of doing that. A typical meeting begins with prayer. We pray for our work, for our families, for the church here, for you, and for wisdom that we need in addressing the challenges the church faces, some of the challenges the members face. So we always begin with a word of prayer in our meetings. We prepare an agenda before the meeting. Sometimes, depending on what's going on, it might be a revised agenda from the previous meeting or some previous meeting, with those completed action items taken out and anything new put in. But an agenda typically has 20 or 30 items on the agenda. I would say lately, I can't recall in the last year or so having one with less than perhaps 15 to 20 items on the agenda. And there are some, occasionally there are 30 items on the agenda. Some of those are multiple items. And those would include a review of the membership, a review of you and your situations, any benevolence that we are aware of and needs to be attended to, and how that's being handled. Any domestic concerns that we're aware of where people need some assistance or where we suspect there's a problem in the home. Any health and medical concerns that people have where we may need some attention or some support or care that they're not getting. Any spiritual concerns, which is finally our focus. All these things have a bearing on spirituality and how you're able to focus your life. We review attendance. We keep an informal attendance survey here. Some of the deacons and assistants to those men prepare that for us. We look that over, and I'll make some more comments about that in a moment too. But we first review kind of the membership. Are there any problems here that we are not addressing that needs to be a matter of our concern? Or anything else we do to help people with their spiritual life. We frequently talk about the work of the deacons, how that's going, if any concerns about that, if they've asked us they frequently ask us for our opinion or a decision about something, or they need some assistance from us, we try to cover those items and get back to them. We discuss the public worship assembly. We talk about, look over the evangelist reports that we've received, and particularly any needs those men have and the work they're doing. We discuss Alan's work here with the church, review these list of sermons and so forth, other things he's doing. The classroom program, curriculum, materials, teachers, anything needs to be addressed in that arena, and any other concern that properly comes to us that we need to discuss and come to some kind of joint conclusion about. Now, the reason I associate long with meetings is because this takes a lot of time. I'll venture a comment tempered somewhat with the air of the political campaign right now, but this is hard. This is work. This is hard work. It takes some dedication to do this. And we try to focus on the task before us and to be successful. The meetings alone that I've mentioned, the elders' meeting plus those with other people and so forth, are a fairly demanding activity. Once we noted at the end of one particular month, that's a couple of years back, that we met 14 times in that one month. That's every other day you're going to a meeting about something. Some of those were, of course, just the elders' meetings. Some were other people who asked to meet with us. But it runs into some dedication of time and effort to have these meetings. But much of what we do is deliberation. It's thinking about things, talking about things, discussing things, getting information from people, and assessing situations in the church here. So it's not unreasonable to have a considerable amount of deliberation in the form of meetings and discussions going on. I wanted to make another comment about interviewing prospective new members. For several years now, this church has interviewed or sit down and talked to anyone who comes and wants to place a membership with us. We think this has been a wise thing to do, and it's worked out very well, we believe. Most churches do this, but I would say in most cases, to my knowledge, it's informal. People don't normally walk in one day and say, we'll place membership with you. They come in, they test the water, we meet them and talk to them. They'll come back again and again. And so usually by the time someone has come to the decision they want to place membership here, several people here know them. They know us. They've seen what goes on and so forth. I think that's what happens in most churches. We've tried to have a particular meeting, a special meeting with each person who wishes to place membership or each family, as the case may be. This provides the opportunity for the elders to meet the person, all the elders to meet the person and their family, if it's a family, all at once. Sometimes they will have met one or two of the elders, or maybe met them all, but over a period of a month or 2 months. And so this is the occasion to sit down and say, okay, these are the guys. And they can also do the same thing with their family, bring their whole family in. We discuss usually a brief survey of the church here and the work of the church here. It's an opportunity for both the elders and for the new member to ask questions. And most people are, I would say, a little reserved at first, but after the meeting begins and a question or two is asked, they embrace that notion and ask questions, and they respond to questions that we ask. But it's to build rapport between the elders and the new person, and ultimately the church and the new person. Sometimes we come across some surprises. We ask in the air of today's society, we think it's always wise to inquire, for example, about marriages. So we ask about marriages and previous marriages and children and so forth. In the case, we get some surprises that we didn't know about. We try to ask about their previous affiliation with a church or with some denomination, find out what the history of this person is. Anything like that might help us to direct them in the right way and help them with their own personal needs in their spiritual life. And we think it builds better rapport within the church to do this. They've been, I think, very successful in what we do. Let me turn now to some other considerations. I've covered kind of what we do and what goes on, but let me discuss some things having to do with perspectives about the eldership and decisions, decision-making, and then what we can do for you and what you can do for us. First, perspectives. I think you need to remember, we try to remember, that elders are individuals first. And because of that, they have their own background. Each has their own background. Each has his own personality, and they're different. Yet, the elders have to work as a group. In this case, there's five men come together. We're all different, but we need to work as a team, as a group, and you need to see us working that way. So when you're talking to Olin, you're just talking to Olin, just a person, and not the eldership. I think all of us try to make comments so that it's clear when we say things, whether Olin is saying it or Olin is reporting that what the eldership has done or what the eldership position on something is. And if not, that's not clear to you, just ask. For example, although I'm the one speaking today, the other elders are aware of what I'm going to say, approximately at least. I gave them a draft of the notes I'm using about a week ago, and they gave me some feedback, some comments about that. So they know generally what I'm going to say this evening. Don't hold them responsible for every sentence I say. I'm the one talking this evening, but we've tried to coordinate even these comments. Similarly, because we're individuals and we have our own background, our own personalities, I think you may see that sometimes we as individuals and certainly as an eldership working together, we may handle some situations different from where you may have seen it handled in the past at some other location because they're different and their situation is different and they have their own background personalities. Now, in all cases, what we're trying to do is right, so you should see people devoting themselves to truth and to what is spiritually uplifting for the church, but not every solution is the same in different churches. At the same time, churches are composed of individuals, and they have their own personalities and background. And so we can't categorize either the nature or the personality of a church. Each one is different. We can kind of describe that. In this church, some comments have been made before about this, but if I were to describe the personality of this church, knowing the background of a lot of the people here, I would probably use the word engineer, and that would surprise the engineers and scare the rest of you, but that comes to mind. We sometimes over-engineer some solutions to problems we have because of the background of people here. But churches, both elderships as a group and churches have their own personality, and that may indicate that may suggest that situations are handled differently from place to place and from time to time even. We try to make wise decisions, decisions that will influence this church for the better, where it involves a particular person or two people or a family. We try to make sure it influences them for the better and their spiritual welfare and spiritual condition, and also the church in the broader sense. Elders don't define truth. We don't define doctrine. We seek to discover what it is in the scriptures, just like every Christian and every gospel preacher. And we then try to understand what that is and apply it to situations that we see in this church. We exercise judgment as needed, seeking the best for all of the church and the members of the church. It's similar to the domestic family. In 1 Timothy 3, Paul brings up the family as a requisite for an elder to demonstrate that he understands how to manage people, how to manage affairs in a family, and he can be head over a family. And this is a requisite for him to be an elder. And so those things need to be considered, and we try to exercise the judgments needed to do that. Our goal, as I say, is to make good decisions for the benefit of the church here. We try to make decisions that are understandable. We recognize, and both understandable about what the decision is and also announce it or report it back to whoever's asking about it in an understandable way so it's clear what we've discussed, what information we had, and what we've concluded about it, and what our judgment about it is. We recognize that members can't always understand our decisions. Some of you may think they're never understandable, but generally they're pretty good. Sometimes our decisions are based on confidential information that we have. This is particularly true with domestic affairs. It might be true with other matters having to do with funds or something else that has come to our attention that is not to be revealed to the church, has not been asked to be revealed to the church, or even permission given to reveal it to the church. But people have come and shared information with us because we need to help them, need to make some decisions about it. We have no right to share the information. And generally speaking, you have no right or need to know the information. That isn't to suggest that there's something covert going on, there's something insidious about the work of the elders. We just have some decision to make. We need certain information to make those decisions, those judgments. And we were able to do that because people trusted us and trusted our information. We believe that handling things in that way will give you confidence so that when you have a problem, you will feel free to come to the elders and discuss that, knowing that they will share your concern about the confidentiality of information or things that are personal to you that need not be revealed. Sometimes things must be revealed, and we are aware of that and will take appropriate action when that takes place. But many times it's not needed to be revealed, and we can help people without in a confidential way. The judgments that we make involve appropriate consideration and discussions about the needs that have come to our attention, about the alternatives, about what possible solutions there are. And we seek to come to an agreement within the eldership about things. It's our intent to move forward in harmony and maintain scriptural purity of the doctrine and practices of this church. From time to time, I hear from people, and this has come up here in the past, about the elders agreeing on things, so much so that you guys get off and you work out something, and then you stick together. You know, you've got it all figured out, and you come out with your announcement, you stick together on it. Well, that's maybe offered sometime in an argumentative sense. We do have an interest in staying together. When we discuss matters where our judgment is required, we try to get the needs identified and alternatives identified and seek an appropriate solution or appropriate judgment for the situation. We don't always agree. Contrary to some popular beliefs or reports, we have some serious discussions sometimes and some sharp differences over matters that come to our attention. Well, how do we handle that? Most of the time, we can handle it because if it's, for example, perhaps a decision to have some man here for a gospel meeting, and we begin to discuss that, and there's five of us now, maybe four of us, two or three of us are very much in favor of it. One is sort of noncommittal, not another guy. One may have some serious reservations about whether this fellow will help us any or not. In a situation like that, typically what we would do would be pass and go to somebody else. Now, that's a case where we didn't have any agreement, but we came to an understanding about the situation. And we, and you would never know we even discussed a topic like that. There are many things like that that come up where we discuss them. There is a difference. We don't always agree on things, but we try to come to as much agreement as we can. If we can resolve any difference, we do that and move forward. And sometimes you'll have discussion where someone, different views will be discussed. Some have some strong views. Some have some soft views, and someone will finally say, I don't think this path is the best way to go. I don't think it's a wrong way to go. And if you gentlemen think this is the proper thing to do, I'll support that effort. I'll support that decision and your judgment about this. And that's the last that's heard of it. We move forward in harmony. We recognize the fact that someone maybe wasn't as enthusiastic about something as someone else might be, or the others might be, but we need to harmonize as much as we can. So we discuss things. We have disagreements over things. we hope those don't boil out to the church to the point of where you see the elders fighting internally over things. That's a possibility if you come to some sharp distinctions and views on doctrine, for example, and particularly the practice of the church. But we try to resolve those things, talk about them, resolve them, and then come to an agreement that we can, in fact, all support. And we hope that's what you see taking place. As I say, that isn't at all to hide the fact we have different views on things, because we do. And if you want to know what someone's particular view is, ask him. We try to all support what we do as a church here and what we've agreed to do. What I suggest is, though, that some things come up that for which we don't get an agreement, we just let it go and don't take any action on things that they're not agreeable to everyone. And we seek to get agreement from the church also. The money that's contributed in the treasury isn't ours. Your hours of time are not ours. We recognize that. And so when we make decisions or judgments that have to do with the treasury or the services here, we try to get the concurrence of the church itself, particularly with regard to the use of the building, with regard to funds the church has, other decisions like that. We seek to lead the church in organizational development, appointment of elders and deacons, in discipline, as that may be needed from time to time, in joint practices and actions like this, our assembly here this evening, appropriate use of funds and so forth. And I will say also that sometimes decisions are made by default. And you say, what does that mean? It means that sometimes the elders make decisions at times and places because no one else has and needs to be made and need to move on as a church. And in fact, inactivity or lack of decision can be a source of contention in the church. When things need to be done, commitments need to be made or something like that, it's wise to move on with things. And sometimes we do it just because it's a vacuum. Nobody else has made the decision or taken the action. Sometimes we're not doing that as decisions, as elders, in my view. We're doing it because we're five old guys that the church trusts, and we got the decision made and moved on with it. The pitfall there is that if it's a good thing and the church likes it, we get the praise for that. If it's bad, we get the blame for it, when it really wasn't ours even to start with necessarily. But I think sometimes people do, we do make decisions by default because no one has to make those decisions. And you'll probably, especially since I made that comment, you'll probably see that from time to time happen. We believe the relationship in the church here between elders and the church is based on trust. Even though you may not understand the background or the information or the judgments we make and decisions we make from time to time, it is our hope that you will trust us and that you will accept those decisions because you do trust us. A church must be able to trust elders, and what that means is that elders must be trustworthy. They have to conduct their lives and their affairs of the church in a way that builds people's trust and confidence in them. And if that takes place, I think it's proper then for the church to trust elders. We should always remember the nature of the office. Acts 20:28, Paul said that the elders were the bishops, in that case, overseers, were made by the Holy Spirit. There's lots of views about what that might mean, but it certainly means at least that elders are in their position as a result of the teaching of the Holy Spirit, delivered by the Holy Spirit. And this is a divinely appointed position, just like all of us are priests in the kingdom of God, divinely appointed position. We're set apart and sanctified. The eldership is a divinely appointed position. We need to remember that the nature of the office. Remember the qualifications that are needed to start with for a man to be selected to serve as an elder. And with that in mind, it's reasonable to accept, you should accept reasonable expectations and explanations from elders. But, as I say, they must be trustworthy, and given that, then you ought to give them their trust. That leads to an obvious question. Suppose you don't have that. What do you do when trust breaks down? Another way to put that is how do you remove elders? There's been discussions during my lifetime about that particular topic, whether elders should serve for a particular time and then resign or be reappointed or reaffirmed. Typically, our brethren have appointed elders and let them serve as long as they are able to do the work. That may or may not be a wise policy. But I think it's good because it provides continuity in the work of the church. There are some dangers in doing that. And, for example, this is a similar situation as you have with preachers. When a preacher's in a position for a long, long time, or elder's in a position for a long, long time, you wind up with a church that didn't actually, that group, select this elder or this preacher because there's been so much turnover over the years. And that's bad. However, every person who came in knew what the situation was when they came, and they have implicitly accepted the situation that existed. So there's two sides to that. But we all think about that from time to time and try to make our lives appropriate to where we do have the trust. Elders do have the trust of the church, and you consider us to be trustworthy. But suppose you have to remove an elder. Here are some thoughts, and these come primarily from me. I would say first make a fair assessment of the elder, each elder, the elder of concern, and his work. Observe the warnings about listening to and accepting as truth false charges or charges about elders. Don't just listen to anyone who is unhappy with something that's taken place. If something comes to your attention that is of some concern, think about the role of an elder, the position of an elder, the nature of that work, and how this information came to you. It could be even personal. You may have it firsthand. Identify your concern in your own mind. What is it that concerns you? Is it a particular decision that you just don't like, that goes against your grain, as they say? Or is there something here that's underneath that's shaking your trust in this man? I would say write down your concern or objection. First, write it down for yourself so that you can be sure you clearly understand what your concern is. This is something we ought to do about all kinds of things in this category. When you are distressed about something, write it down. If you can't articulate it to yourself, you might want to rethink it some. And then make sure you have the facts that are relevant, that you understand the situation. It's not hearsay and so forth. Having done that, and you have a legitimate concern, I would go talk to the elder, to the man in question, and call this to his attention. If this is something that is difficult for you to do because of past problems or because you don't have the rapport built with that man, give it to him in a written form. Send him a letter, email, something. Let him know what your concern is. And then allow some time for consideration of that. Don't expect to hand someone a statement that raises a question about his integrity or about his maturity or his ability to perform what he's been doing for years. I expect him to take it and say, I hadn't thought about this before. He probably has. And if there's problems that are of a real concern, he's probably has noted that before. Give him some time to think about it. And follow up if you need to, but give him time to think about it. Ultimatums probably won't work. It's easy to push people into corners. That's what ultimatums do. So identify your concern, plant the seed, give it some time to mature. And frankly, if there's a real problem, a genuine problem with an elder or an eldership, give some time for other people to do the same thing you've done. It's not likely, if it's a problem, that you're the only one who has noticed it. So give some time for other people to call these same attentions to the elder. So that's an approach you can try. It's just a suggestion. You may have some other way to approach that. But certainly a man is not going to be effective when he's lost the trust of the church where he serves. And you will not be pleased with his work and his leadership if you don't feel he's trustworthy. So if that case arises, help work it out. Now I have two or three lists of things. I'll try to move through these quickly. What your elders can't do for you. We can't practice medicine. We're concerned if you're not feeling well. We can only sympathize with you, encourage you, offer suggestions. We don't know anything about medicine. We can refer you to someone who does. But we can't help you that way. We can't practice law. We're not lawyers. Most of us have some experience with law, with our own family, with things having to do with law. But we're not lawyers. So if you have a problem with legal affairs, we can listen. We're concerned. We can make suggestions. But we can't solve your law problem. We can't practice psychiatry. We are concerned. We can only sympathize, encourage, support, suggest to you about what to do. But we're not psychiatrists either. In that realm, we can help with domestic situations sometimes. We can help with emotional distress sometimes. We can make recommendations to you. We can support you with general spiritual guidance and encouragement, as we should be doing anyway. But I say all that to say that you can't look at the eldership as being a panacea for all the problems you have. We are very concerned about the Christians in this family. And we will do what we can for them, but there's some things we can't do for them, and some things we shouldn't do for them. And we try to recognize that and make those distinctions. So what can the elders do for you? What can we really do for you? I think it'll be summarized in two or three items. We can lead in providing a good environment for worship. I think it's our responsibility to have a commodious building, to have things in place, the physical needs, to have teaching in place, singing in place, have these things ready for you when you come to worship so that you can come into this building and meet together with us and worship, not have to tend to those things. So we try to do that. We make a good environment for that. We can provide an environment for spiritual growth, try to help you as you mature spiritually. And that will include the classroom program, sermons in the public assembly, one-on-one teaching, to make any other needed arrangements that we need to do that, special lectures to come in, so forth. And we can represent your matters, frankly, of concern that you may have to one of us, to the other elders, and be, in a sense, your advocate if you want to discuss it with just one of us. So those are some things we can do for you. I'm sure you're familiar with those. Let me suggest some things you can do for the elders and for this church. First of all, pray for us. We appreciate the frequent mention of the eldership in prayers in this assembly. If I'm correct, we were mentioned twice this morning and once this evening already in prayers in this assembly. That's encouraging to us to know that you care, that you're concerned, and you're thinking about the work of the church. We need that encouragement and that concern. Secondly, be here. Be here. Read Hebrews 10:25 more frequently. When the saints are assembling together, feel some interest in the work and be here. Let me make an observation and listen carefully to how I say this. Indifference to the assembly of saints is one of the first signs of spiritual weakness. Not the assembly. Some people can't come. Some people are sick. Some people are out of town for prolonged periods of time. Some people have conflicts. Indifference to the need to assemble with the saints. It's one of the first signs of spiritual weakness. So think about your role here and be here. Honor your elders. Remember who they are. If you don't like someone's personality, that's okay. We don't have to be your favorite buddy. But honor us for the position that we serve and help us in the work we do. Cultivate your rapport with the elders. Maybe some relationships might be more natural than others because of backgrounds, age, other things like that, maturity. Offer suggestions to us, speakers, topics, classes, the worship assembly. We need that information, and we try to seek the information as we make decisions relating to those things. Encourage each other as members of the family. Feel that this is your brother and your sister, and take an interest in their lives and their affairs. Advise elders of others who need encouragement or support. Sometimes we don't know. People are facing difficulties that we don't hear about until they're well into it. So let us know if there's something you think we're not aware of. And give us feedback when it's needed. We try to always, for example, ask about supporting men in the field. If it's a man we've already supporting, where we've already made some judgment about the man himself and the work he's doing, we may or may not mention that in the assembly if he needs additional support or some one-time support for something. But we try to always mention any new work we take on involving a new man or a new place so that you'll know what that is. You may know something about it, good or bad. We need to know what the information is. So give us some feedback as these topics come along. This church has been blessed. There are 231 Christians who assemble at this place. If you add in the attendees, a lot of which are short, small people, we probably have about 320 or 30. Our regular attendance runs in the high 200s, but there's 231 Christians here. We're growing. This church is interested in spiritual matters, and we have comments unsolicited in the hallway, over the phone, meals and so forth in your homes about the work of the church that says to us that you're interested in what's going on and you care. This church is capable of many good works. They're willing to share with others. This church supports evangelistic efforts around the world, literally. It's composed of kind-hearted people with charitable dispositions toward each other and the world. The elders recognize this and want to acknowledge it always, that we are aware of that. We've made the observation in meetings among just the elders frequently that one of the greatest challenges that we face as an eldership is to lead this church in the wise use of all the resources that we have here. And I'm not talking about dollars. Those are nice. We have some families here and people here who have good jobs. They make good money. They are liberal with that money. That's nice. But we have resources of talent. People here can do so much of interest. They're dedicated to the work here and interested in the work here. Resources of other friends, other contacts they have. Resources in teaching the classroom program, in speaking here. We've mentioned recently we have a challenge in getting all the men who want to speak and want to lead singing, and I'm taking up one of the speaking slots myself tonight, to getting to all of them. That means we have lots of resources here, a lot of people interested in that work. That's a wonderful thing to have, and it's, as I say, it's a great challenge we have. It's kind of the best of all problems, is to have so much resources to work with. Personally, I think this church has been blessed beyond any other church I've had of this size, certainly had any association with, because of what we can do and because of what we are doing. So we recognize that. We're very appreciative for it and very appreciative for your support and your prayers from time to time on our work. And we look forward to continuing our work together and continuing in growing together in the gospel of grace. You know, we have a wonderful relationship as in this church's family. It's a comforting thought that other people care for us. That makes you feel good to have a mate who cares for you, to have a family who cares for you, and to have this spiritual family who cares for you. That's a comforting thought. Shepherds, the term shepherds is used toward the eldership in a special way, that this is their role is to feed the church and to care for the church. Everyone needs that family and the care of a shepherd. The special good news is that we always can depend on the great shepherd. That where people are limited in their abilities, or their knowledge, their wisdom, the great shepherd isn't. And we can always rely upon knowing that the great shepherd feeds us and cares for us. We're going to stand and sing a song about that. And I want to invite any of you who have some need, some spiritual need, to come forward and make that known as we stand. Jesus, the loving shepherd.